Blog Talk Radio.
Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. Our show tonight is Betrayed by Hospice. It's hosted by Marcia Joyner, and all shows on TS Radio Network are sponsored by and coordinated with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit that takes place in Washington, D.C. at the end of July every year. We will be there again this year with our panel, as will many other people who join us on these shows. Marcia's guest this evening is someone that I have very high respect for, Carol Herman. And with that, I'll turn you over to your host. Take it away, Marcia.
All right. Tonight we have Carol Herman, and she is the founder of the Foundation Aiding the Elderly. That is FATE, called FATE. And I don't know if she is on with us yet. Marty?
I am.
Yes, she is.
I am.
Okay,
I am.
Excellent. Okay, Carol, I'll let you start by telling us what made you become the founder of FATE.
Okay, this was not my career path, and about in 1980, the latter part of 1980, my dear aunt, who was also like my mother, ended up in a nursing home here in Sacramento. She had been over-medicated by a new doctor she went to and took a fall because of the medication and broke a hip, ended up in a nursing home. Well, you know, in 1980s, early 80s, nobody knew anything about nursing homes. So when she ended up in this nursing home, we didn't know anything either, but big family, we were there every day visiting her, asking questions, never got a good answer. To make a long story short, she was drugged with an antipsychotic. She was private pay. They were paying a lot of, we were paying a lot of money for her. They wanted to incarcerate her and keep her there because of the money, because they're for profits before patients. And she ended up dying from an infected bed sore that we didn't even know what that was. So she passed away as a result of the Haldol that she was given, and also, well, started with the first drugs the doctor gave her. She became incapacitated, fell, broke a hip, ended up in the nursing home. They gave her antipsychotics. She was bedridden. She could never walk again. She got a bed sore. Nobody told us. And she ended up dying from blood poisoning from that bed sore. That spurred me on to investigate nursing homes and what was going on here and how that this could happen right in front of my eyes. So I went to the – I'm in the state capital of California, and I went to the – started investigating and found out how they operate, took my complaint to the head of the agency that oversees nursing homes. And lo and behold, unbeknownst to me, the head of the agency destroyed my complaint the minute I walked out of his office and stonewalled me for about a year. And then I caught on to him, got him fired from the state of California. He could never work again in a for a government agency, lost his pension, and immediately went to work for the nursing home industry. So, boy, I
oh,
got it.
Oh, goodness.
So I figured it out that the regulators were in bed with the industry. So I started the Foundation Aiding the Elderly, we acronym FATE. And since that time, we now have clients in every state, and we have served about 7,200 families. So I'm very proud of that. We've been able
Absolutely.
To help a lot of people. What sets us apart from other advocacy organizations is we take no government money, and that's in our bylaws. So we're able to operate as we see fit, and I'm about the rule of the law, about enforcement. And when people harm our most vulnerable citizens, I want them held accountable. So basically, that's a short story of how I started all this, and the work continues. It's worse than ever, and I know we're going to sort of hone in on conservatorships tonight. I got wind of conservatorships in 1986 when I had a client. I was called by a gentleman that met this woman in a nursing home who was under the Public Guardians program, and she had been abused and her money stolen, and that's how I found out about conservatorships, and it was Public Guardians. Then over subsequent years, I started getting calls from all over the country about private conservators, and I've got about 400 documented cases now of abuse of conservatorships all over the country. I believe it's the next big scandal to hit this country. So
now,
that's
is that just like the guardianship? Is that
yes,
the same
yes.
thing?
Okay. We call them conservatorships here. Other states call them guardianships.
Okay.
The Deep South, they're called curators. But it is. It's when somebody is incapable and a third party comes in and starts controlling their assets and their person. So,
okay, now you say when they're incapable, there still are cases where people are competent and they just come in and take it away from them, correct?
Well, if that's the case, then no, not the ones that I come in contact with. They're all people that are incompetent, or their sibling rivalry over who gets appointed guardian of mom, or who has the power of attorney, or who's going to get what money when mom dies, and then there becomes sibling rivalry, and that is the beginning of the end. So I always tell people, when you have siblings, you start fighting over who's going to take care of mom and who's going to inherit mom's money. That's very dangerous.
Absolutely.
And usually the public guardians get involved. One sibling will file for a conservatorship guardianship, and the other one will contest it. And my experience is they get into the courtroom, and the judge says, oh, wait a minute. Everybody's fighting now, so I'm going to appoint a non-biased, impartial third party to manage your mother's health and her finances. And that's where the problems begin.
Very dangerous.
Very, very dangerous. And I was able, this is about 15 years ago, I worked with the L.A. Times, and we did a big expose on conservatorships, and it was a three-day series. I don't remember the year, but I remember the date that it first was in print. It was November 13th, November 13th, 14th, and 15th, and I can't remember the year. That article ran in the L.A. Times, and it spurred the state of California, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in California opened up a hearing type thing to see what was going on in the courts as it pertained to conservatorships. Well, it didn't work. They had three meetings in California, and the panel consisted of probate judges. Well, the probate judges are the ones that are appointing the third parties to come over and take over mom's care and her finances, and I think it's there's a lot of corruption in the courts on that too. So, and I hate to be so jaded, but can't help it. We only get bad calls here.
Well, you've seen it happen.
Oh, time and time again.
So that I think a lot of us become jaded once you see it happen.
Oh yes, I have a case in Missouri that I've worked on now for how many years now. And it's a public guardian, and they wanted the property that the woman had, and she was doing very well living with her daughter until one of the siblings didn't like it and wanted to get conservatorship. Well, then the public guardian took over, and they've done nothing but that woman has nothing but suffered from abuse in a nursing home in Missouri. I have filed 5 official complaints about what happened to this woman and copied in the public guardian, because the public guardian did nothing. And the state came back and unsubstantiated everything, and there's so many lies. They're protecting the public guardian, because I found out in this facility that there's a lot of, I call them conservatees, people under guardianship that are in this facility, and it's all mm-hmm. under the public guardian. So they're protecting the county, the guardianships. They're protecting them. So I've just recently wrote a letter to the governor of the state of Missouri and sent him copies of all my complaints and how they were all unsubstantiated. And these were horrible complaints. Malnutrition, weight loss, numerous falls, broken hip, bed sores, and the state of Missouri unsubstantiated every one of my complaints.
So they didn't believe anything you said?
No. They believed what the public guardian said and what the nursing home said, but not what the actual facts were. That happens all over.
Can we make change then?
Well, it's very difficult because where the problem is in the court.
Mm-hmm.
The judges are sanctioning these conservatorships without a blink of an eye. They're appointing some third party, and then nobody goes back and looks to what happened. I blame the courts for this, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I've got my reasons, you know, why they do it, and it's all about money. Especially in California, you know, we have this what's called Prop 13. So many, many years ago, Prop 13 passed in California, and it held the property tax rate at a very low rate, and it cannot ever be raised. Well, new house people come in and buy homes, and it's under the old rate. So a lot of elderly people, especially women, their houses are paid for. So it behooves them to get that house sold because it benefits the county because the taxes are raised. So, for instance, a house, you know, one house might be paying $1,500 a year in property taxes, and the house next door is paying $15,000. So it behooves the public entities to sell that house so that the next buyer comes in and the property taxes are elevated 15 times.
While the person is in conservatorship or guardianship, then mm-hmm. the person that is in control of them can go ahead and sell their house because they say that they need the money to pay for the facilities and their medical care and
oh yeah, they
know,
can
clothes,
they can do it.
Like
when, once you're the guardian, you have control of everything. So they can sell the house. They can put that person wherever they want. They make all the medical decisions. They take complete control, which is very scary.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, the reason for selling it is so they can get the money from it, and they lie about the expenses, and that house is sold, and like you say now, that the county is going to get more taxes from the new person.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I've caught them doing so many things with triple escrowing houses, and the house all of a sudden becomes the owner becomes the original real estate person that was appointed by the court. I mean, I can't begin to tell you the work that we've done here at FATE put a trail on these cases to see what's really going on, and it's very scary. But it's trying to get somebody's attention that is in the position of authority that's going to do something about it. And even though there's laws to protect them, there's a lack of enforcement. So if there's no oversight, there's no reason for anybody to behave any differently because these people are getting paid, they're making a lot of money, they're taking these estates, and nobody's really holding them accountable.
So can you give us some information on some of the cases where you have actually been able to succeed and make reform, make any changes?
You mean as far as conservatorship? Very few victories. The only thing I was able to accomplish was in California, and I had testified in front of the legislator and all that, got these legislators to pass a law in California that private conservators, guardians, have to have a license. So now they're sort of monitored in California, but not really. There wasn't a lot of money put in to fund this bureau, and they have one investigator for the entire state. So I filed the first complaint against a private fiduciary in California, and it took 4 years for them to come to a decision that there was nothing wrong. It's very frustrating. I don't know what it's going to take to reverse this. I mean, there's a lot of very famous people now that have been under these guardianships or conservatorships that are hitting the news, too, but they don't seem to be getting anywhere either, like the
right.
Glenn Campbell family, the Peter Falk family, Mickey Rooney's family, even Mary Astor, one of the richest women in the world in New York, who's, I can't remember, I think it was a nephew or son, one of them, that took advantage of her estate, put her under guardianship, and took all her money. So I'm going, well, when's this going to end? I have tried for years. But there's more people that are being affected, and there's more publicity on it. There's a Dr. Sam Sugarman. I don't know if you know that name. Do you know that name?
I do not. I do not.
And I'm trying
do you,
to
Marty?
I don't know if Marty's still there, is she?
Okay.
Yes, I am. I'm just watching the board and everything. Yeah, I know Dr. Sam Sugar. Yes.
Yeah, they're doing something in Florida, and then in the next month or so, they're going to have some big meeting with all these people that were affected.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I can't get back there for it. But, you know, there's so much money involved, and it involves the court. And I think these judges should be held accountable for this, because what they're doing is they're just sanctioning all these cases and not really looking back and saying, okay, well, we gave them the power to, you know, oversee Mrs. Smith's money and her person. So whatever happened to Mrs. Smith? They're not doing that.
Well, what about
can I say?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead,
sorry.
Marty.
Could I say something here? What you're going to find out is that person sitting up there claiming to be a judge is not. That's a ministerial clerk or an administrator, and they do not deal with law. They are
well,
not required to have...
Well, that's in some states, but not all states. In California, you have to go in front of a superior court judge.
Right. But they don't have to be... They don't have to have any law training because they don't deal with law. They're dealing with statute and code. And what they do when they get
statute
that...
Statute and code
order,
is law.
No, it actually isn't. But I'm not going to pick bones
with you
here.
Yeah, let's not get it, Leah. Let's not go there.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is what you're dealing with is someone who is working for the same people that have come against the victim. They are working with the same agencies. They are indirectly receiving pay from them, and they also benefit from that estate, as you talked about.
Right.
It is a sick, insidious system. And many of the people that are put into conservatorship and guardianship are very competent. They are not incompetent on any level. They just have money. They just have something
well,
somebody
you know,
else wants.
Well, you know, I don't. Do you know what states that they're not judges? Because I think we might have had this conversation before.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I have not done that research.
Yeah. Well, I know here in Minnesota. These are just, it's set up under umbrella agencies. And an umbrella agency is like social services, health and human services. They're set up, and these are all executive branch agencies. When I first started in this, Carol, which was about 10, 12 years ago, we kept getting batted back and forth between the judiciary and the legislature. The you know Congress, oh that's legislative, we can't, it's separation of powers, we can't get in, oh no that's judicial, we can't get in that, it's separation of powers, and they were both lying and telling the truth at the same time, because it was executive branch. These are appointees in most states. Even if you think you're voting for them, you are not. You have two selected candidates by the executive who are put up there, and you pick one or the other, or you vote for neither. Either way, somebody else got the job. I mean, they got the job before that ballot ever came out. Here in Minnesota, everything is hooked to Health and Human Services, and that's the umbrella agency. That is contracted to the federal level, Health and Human Services. This is how they get federal money. Okay?
So in Minnesota, you don't a superior court judge does not hear the case of a conservatorship or guardianship?
No. No.
Do you know of other states that do you know of other states that do that?
Yeah, New York is another state that does that. We have got, oh my gosh, Texas. These are all, and Florida is another big state where they set up under that Pasadena bill that was passed here 3 or 4 years ago. The clinker in that bill was that they were setting up a new agency within probate that must, underline, capital letter, must be headed by a member of the Bar Association, so that you could never get out of probate, which is an administrative tribunal, and get into civil or criminal court. That is exactly what that obstacle is there for. This is, and the other thing is these probate administrators, these tribunal masters, if they, let's say, for instance, they hold you in contempt of court, they have no authority to do so, or they say you're going to jail. They have no authority to put you there. They consider this a spreadable determination, and they send it over to a state judge who will sign it and send it back, but that person sitting up there sending you to jail has no authority to do that. There's just so much that goes on behind the scenes that people are not aware of, and Carol, I've gotten into this so far that at times I think I almost drove myself crazy. It's just twisted. But yeah, in most states, they are political appointees. They're selected like a magistrate is selected by the governor, and that type of thing. But
well, we have that here, but that's federal. But that's federal law.
Yeah.
The federal courts here, you have a magistrate. So are you saying
there's
that all these ones?
There's a difference in the different states on how they do the conservatorship or the guardianship.
Yeah.
So I think we can say that that's kind of different. I wanted to also to discuss the nursing homes, if we can talk about the nursing homes and the things that are done there. If there's like warning signs that anybody who's listening would know that if their loved one is in a nursing home, are there particular things they should look for? And if they see those things, what can they do? What options do they have?
You mean are you talking about bad care?
Yes, I am.
Conservatorship side?
Yes.
I mean, we're not talking about conservatorships, right?
No, we're talking
about somebody who's been
in a nursing home.
Right. Before we do that, though, before I give some advice on that, the one thing that I will say is that I have just recently been running across people that have their family members in acute hospitals, and the acute hospital will either want to do some type of surgery or they want to move you out or – you know, they just want, and the family says, no, we're not going to approve that. No, we're not going to do that. That the hospitals now are going to the courts to get control of the person. Well, you can't be a corporation and be a conservator or a guardian. It doesn't work like that.
So
they'll go to court.
Staff, you're saying the hospital staff, because you say you won't approve a surgery for someone, the hospital staff tries to take over?
Oh, yes. Oh, I've got quite a few of those. So what they'll do is they'll contact the court and say, oh, this family member is not acting in the best interest of this patient, so we want that patient conserved so that somebody else will make the decision and not the family.
Is the patient not able to make the decision themselves?
That's right. That's right.
Okay, so
compromised, right?
Okay, so we've talked in the past, I think, a little bit about having a medical power of attorney. So
right.
If you have given somebody else in your family and you have a medical power of attorney that says, I want this individual to speak for me if I'm incapacitated, are you saying at that point, you know, if my dad goes into the hospital and he's not capable of making that decision because he's out or, you know, whatever.
Right, incompetent.
And I've got a document that says that I have the power of attorney for his medical care.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say you're not going to do that to him, you're not going to give him those drugs, or you're not going to perform
that. Oh, you can say,
that.
Oh, absolutely. No, you
right,
have the right to
do that.
Right, they
take that away from me?
They can file a petition
okay.
with the court and stating you are not acting in the best interest of the patient's health, and they can have that reversed. Oh, yeah, it's, believe me, it's powerful. They wield a lot of power, and the courts usually tend to go side with the hospital or somebody else other than the family member making those decisions. You know, I have gone to court and testified on cases before with some of my clients saying, you know, Your Honor, when my client, Mrs. Smith, was of sound mind, she put in her directive that she wants her daughter to make all her decisions. Now you're saying, since the daughter is making these decisions, that you're going to take that away from her? That's not what the patient, this Mrs. Smith, wanted. She wanted her daughter to be in charge, not the public guardian. I get it, they lose every time.
The hospital
they
loses. Okay, so
No. The patient's family loses.
The patient loses.
Yeah, the patient loses. It's very frightening. It's very frightening how powerful the courts are and how that judge could make a decision and lay down that, you know, his, you know, pound down his table and say, you know, this is how it's going to be, case dismissed. It's very scary. It's very scary.
So is there nothing that an individual could do to protect their loved one from that?
Oh, well,
you
can hire an attorney.
Surgery,
sure,
right?
You can hire an attorney and fight what they're doing in the courtroom, and it'll cost you $15,000, $20,000 to do it, because that's another way what these lawyers are doing in the courtrooms, and the judges are allowing it. They go into court and get it postponed. So every time they walk in, every time they get in their car to drive to that courtroom, they're on the clock. Then they get into the courtroom, and I've sat there many, many times watching this, and the judge will call their case, and I'll say, oh, well, you know, Your Honor, I'm not quite ready to present to the court right now. Could we postpone that for 2 weeks? Granted. And all the while, that lawyer and whoever else is on the payroll is cha-ching, cha-ching on that, the conservatee's estate.
Well, plus then they've already done the surgery by that time if it needed to be done.
Oh,
I mean,
no, they
if
can't.
It realistically.
They have to, no. They have to approve it. They can't legally. They can't do that. They'd be a big, but you know who knows how many times they're doing it, because some of the clients that call here when this happens, they don't have a clue. They think that the hospitals can do that, and they get referred to our office, and we say, oh no, they can't do that. Why don't you go fight that, you know? And they lose every time. It's really scary, because they have all the money.
Is there any case in a situation just about the acute hospitals? Are there any cases that you actually win?
Well, not so much in the acute hospital side. Trying to do it with nursing homes, have tried that too, and we've won a couple of those where it didn't happen. But usually the acute hospitals, because they've got so much power and they've got so much money and they've got a whole bank of attorneys that are on the clock for them through their insurance companies, and then the poor family members, they have to pay their own legal fees. And a lot of them they don't have the money to do that. So they can't fight it. It's very scary.
That sounds dismal.
It is dismal.
And definitely very scary.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to protect your loved one, and in that case, what I'm hearing is we're really powerless. If
so far,
goes in.
So far.
Okay.
Now, I had a case that I won, but it wasn't the gentleman had a lot of money, lived alone, and his health was not good. But he was, you know, somebody got wind of the fact that he wasn't doing well, and they filed for conservatorship of him and to appoint this private conservator here in Sacramento, who I think is a thief, and that person gets appointed by the court a lot, and I think that the judges are getting kickbacks. I can't prove it, but I know they are. So a neighbor was a very good friend for years, and she wanted to be his conservator. So they told him that the person that was going to be conserved, because they took over temporary conservatorship, they said he was not competent enough to come to court. Well, guess what? We took him to court.
It was a lie?
He was competent. We took him to court, and he got in front of the judge and said, I don't want that person to be my conservator. I don't trust her. She's after my money. I want my neighbor to do it. And the judge could, he was caught. He had to appoint the neighbor.
Ah.
So that was a victory. That was a victory.
Right, right.
But it took a lot of work to do that. We had to end up clandestinely picking him up at his house and taking him into the courtroom. And believe mm-hmm. me, the attorneys for the private conservator, they were shocked. They were shocked.
I'm surprised you got him out of his house without them showing up and
trying to
stop that. Yeah, we did. That's good.
So okay. He's still doing good, but, you know, you have to be very proactive. And unfortunately, if they get conserved and, you know, through the court, you're going to have to hire an attorney to fight it. And my experience is you usually lose, and there's a lot of money spent, a lot of lawyers making a lot of money, and nothing ever happens. Nothing changes.
Mm-hmm.
It's very scary.
It is. Okay, so can we, all right, that's the acute hospital. What about at nursing homes?
Well, they've tried to do the same thing to get somebody, you wanted me to talk about what to look for?
When you're in a nursing, because, you know, what I'm hearing is the conservatorship, guardianship, if they've taken that over, the family member is pretty much not going to be able to get it back. In an acute hospital, if they want to do surgery on you and you are the appointed power of attorney,
mm-hmm.
Medical, then they're going to override you and do what they want to do.
Yeah,
so
if they want to. Yeah.
Right. So if you're in a nursing home and your loved one is there and is not being cared for properly, not being fed right, has bed sores, you know, multiple falls, like you said earlier, what can the individual person do to protect their loved one?
Well, first thing you do is get them out of there. If your loved one is, extreme weight loss, if you're seeing that there's insufficient staffing, if your family member is ill, if there's a bed sore, you just call 911 and get your loved one out of there into an emergency room. And then you have the right to refuse to send your loved one back to that facility. That's in the statute. So then you just tell the hospital that you want to have your family member placed in a different facility because it was abusive. And you have the right to do that. So then you have to work with the hospitals to help find another placement for your loved one. But if all those things are happening, don't ever, ever hesitate to call 911
and get
that family member out of there. Now, what the facilities will say, you can't do that. The doctor has to approve, transfer to a hospital. That is not true at all. You have the right to call 911 and get your family member out of there, especially if they're at risk. Dehydration, malnutrition, bed sores in particular will kill you, so get that person out of there. And all you have to do is call 911. Paramedics are very good, and what they document in their records as to the condition that they find your family member in, make sure you get a copy of that, because they don't lie. The paramedics
mm-hmm.
have nothing to lie about. They're not responsible, but the facilities will lie about everything. They'll mischart, they'll false chart, they'll do all kinds of stuff, not to be held accountable. So get your family member out of there. You can call 911 and get them out. You just say elder abuse, want my family member out of here, into the emergency room. And I always suggest, if that happens, to get a toxicology to see what kind of drugs your family member was being given. That's very important.
Okay, and you would order that at the hospital?
Yeah, in the emergency room. And emergency room, anybody in the medical profession or anybody who has anything to do with health care are mandated reporters to report elder abuse. So they're not doing it, I can tell you that. The emergency room doctors and nurses are not reporting. Most 99% of the time they don't report. But they should be. And report it to the authorities that there's elder abuse. And people can always call my office. We file complaints all over the country. That's one of the things that we do for our clients, is we take up the administrative complaint and follow it through to make sure
okay.
that it's investigated properly. However, what I'm finding in most states, nobody is doing this but FATE, my organization. And when I call them, they're in a tizzy. Well, who are you? Well, we work for the Prevention of Elder Abuse, and do you know this, this, and that? They said, well, we've never had anybody ask these questions. And I said, yeah, because the general public doesn't know what their rights are. We know what the rights are of the patient and their family, and here's what you're going to do. So they have to sort of, like, back off. They don't like it, but we
so
know.
So could you do that? Say, for instance, your loved one is in a nursing home, and you believe that that's going on, or, you know, maybe they have bed sores or they're lethargic or, you know, you're not certain. So they're not like, you know, they're not getting broken bones and things, but you suspect that. Is there any way to find out, you know, by contacting your office or are there, I mean, you can look at reviews on places and people can say they're really good, but they're not. So is there a way to find, I guess,
the best nursing home? No. Do not. There aren't any good nursing homes. I put them bad, worse, and deplorable. And that's a horrible thing to say, but I've had too much experience, and we have thousands of nursing homes. We don't recommend nursing homes anywhere. The CMS rating system where they rate nursing homes, you know, on the 1 to 5, which you're, you know about the rating system, correct?
No, why I'm asking you.
Oh,
no.
Center for Medicare has a rating system where they rate nursing homes. So if you look up a nursing home, it'll say, oh, Medicare rating is a 5-star or a 2-star. Those are self-reported incidences by the facility.
Okay.
I did a big story with a New York Times. They came here and they came to California and filmed in my office, and we did it on their online New York Times, and it was also in the hard copy. The Medicare rating system is a failure. Do not go by the rating system at all. You got to do it by yourself, your gut feeling. I always tell my family members, go to the closest facility of the person that's going to see the patient the most so that you have quick access to that facility.
Okay.
And you have to be vigilant, and you have to dog them, and you have to complain. And if things don't happen, you can always call my office, and then we would get involved and make the calls directly to the nursing homes ourselves. And they usually pay attention when an organization calls that works for the prevention of elder abuse. But they're going to take advantage of the normal consumer that does not know what their rights are.
Right, exactly.
And that's what they count on. They count on that. And they're
so
all
like
about
you
profit.
Said, you have to show up. You have to go there at odd times, and
yes.
So you can walk in when they least expect you to come. Don't
absolutely.
Just go
don't ever
normal
go the same
visiting
time.
Hours.
That's right. Don't go the
right.
normal. Oh, and the normal visiting hours. This is another thing that the nursing homes do. They post visiting hours. Visiting hours do not, in big capital letters, apply to family members. Family members have access 24/7. That's under the federal law.
Great.
The facilities don't want you in there at night, at midnight or 2:00, because that's when they don't have any staff.
Right.
And they don't want anybody in there, so they post these visiting hours, and they'll say, oh, well, Mrs. Jones, it's 8 o'clock now, and the visiting hours are over. Uh-uh. Not for family members. So if nothing else with your audience hears today, know that you can go visit a family member in a nursing home 24/7.
Can I ask a question? Carol, does that law also apply to hospitals?
Good question. I believe it does.
Oh, bless your heart.
I don't think you can. I don't think it does. You know, when you're in an environment like that, they consider it's almost like your home. They can't prevent family members from visiting. You
okay.
know, that's a good question, Marty. I'll research that, and maybe you can bring it to your audience's attention next time. But I believe
okay.
it does, but I'm not positive.
Okay.
Thank you.
But I'm very much positive that it's nursing homes.
Well, I know with hospice, if they're inside the facility, that family members can come and stay there or come at any time. There are no visiting hours.
Right.
That are just certain. They can come at any time.
Right. But
members.
That applies to anyone that's a family member of a nursing home resident. See, the general public doesn't know that. And the industry doesn't want you to know that because they don't want you in there. They don't want anybody in there, really.
Of course not. Of course
so, so that's what I always, you know, we try to empower the people that call this office. We try to empower them with knowledge so that they'll know what their rights are. So when they do go into a facility, that they will stand up for their rights and the rights of that patient, that they have every right to be in there. Plus, these facilities are funded by the government. About 87, almost 90% of people that are in skilled nursing homes in this country, it's being paid by either Medicare, Medicaid. Here in California, it's called Medi-Cal. So you got government money. As a citizen, you can go into any area in that nursing home that's public and go in and look around, except for a patient's room. You cannot enter a patient's room unless you knock on the door and ask if you can come in. But any other place in that facility, you have the right to walk in there because they're getting government. They're getting our tax dollars. Do you have the right to go in there? You have the right to go into the kitchen. So people don't know what their rights are. That's why things they get taken advantage of.
Right. And it's a lot of research before you put your parent or loved one in a facility to go and look at all of them that are anywhere near your area.
Right.
Like you were
saying,
who's going to visit them the most if you have to do it? And, you know, unfortunately, some people have to do it. They're, you know, both people are working. They can't stay at home with the person. The person needs 24-hour care. I mean, there are circumstances where people have to put them in nursing homes in a facility.
Absolutely.
And they shouldn't feel guilty about it. You do what you can. If you can keep them with you, then you do that.
Plus,
so,
it's very expensive to have in-home care, and unless it's hospice where, you know, Medicare is paying for some of the hospice charges, it's very expensive. And people just don't have the money to do that. It's very expensive.
That's right.
So, you know, who wants to go to a nursing home? No one.
No one.
But like you said, it happens.
What
are your choices,
right.
And who's going to take care of that person? And maybe the acuity level is so high that the person can't walk, so how do you lift them?
How do you get them a shower?
Right. And, you know, these nursing homes should not be abusing the patients and mistreating them. They're getting away with it because there is no oversight in this country. And I can say that because we have clients in every state. There is no oversight. And the industry is very powerful. They're paying off the politicians. I mean, look up some of the politicians in your states to see where they're getting their money for their elections. A lot of them are from the nursing home industry PACs, pharmaceutical companies, because they're big in nursing homes. Big, big.
Oh, absolutely.
And there's no oversight on the drugs. For the first time in 30-plus years, I finally caught them. Because I know that they steal the drugs all the time, but we can't catch them because we don't have a gun and a badge. And the state regulators won't do it. They won't do it. So we caught this one in Oregon, and I pushed it and pushed it and pushed it because there was an autopsy of my client's mother, and there was no the drugs were not in her system. And the state of Oregon first said, though that drug dissipates in the system, and, they gave her medications, they charted it. Oh, yeah, right, they were charting it as they were stealing it. And it's drugs that are narcotics that have a street value. They're either drug addicts themselves or they're selling them on the streets. And finally, when I got involved and challenged the state of Oregon regulators, they had no choice. They had to go in again, and the nurse admitted it, that he was stealing the drugs, along with another nurse who was already on probation for stealing drugs. And they allowed him to go.
Didn't they check that before they hired them?
Oh, wouldn't you think?
I would.
Well, I think the director of nurses is involved, too. They haven't busted her yet. But the grand jury indicted him seven felony charges. So, he was indicted about 2 months ago. Yep.
In Oregon.
And I called the nursing board and filed a complaint against him, and they sent me a kiss-off letter. And then I called them again after the grand jury indicted. Now they're taking action. But they didn't take any action either. It's very scary how these regulators don't do their job.
Go.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and drugs is one of the real big concerns. I know of one of the Facebook groups that I'm a member of, Murdered by Hospice, and drugs is very prominent in most of our members because they've seen their loved ones' death hastened by the overdose of the drugs.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought
years and years ago when this hospice thing first started, my feeling on that was that's the beginning of euthanasia.
Absolutely.
And I still believe that. And, you know, I did look up some laws about hospice, and the family members have to agree to hospice, and you have to agree to the medications. So keep in mind that usually the person that is in hospice is not competent to make any kind of decisions. So, so the surrogate decision maker is going to be responsible for that. And I'm a believer that people are going on a hospice for a couple reasons. They get extra care that comes in, and Medicare pays for it. Medicare will pay for that. And
I think that a lot of the people that are under hospice are tricked into going into it because they take a carrot and they say, oh, we're going to come in and help you and, you know, give you a bath and, you know, you don't have to go to the doctor. We'll come in and, you know, send a nurse in here so you don't have to physically go to the doctor. It is a carrot they wave. And I know, and I say this because of my mother's situation, that the drugs that she was given were not authorized. She did not give them consent, and neither did my dad. So,
okay, so that's
what
we'll be working on.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I've got other cases where all of a sudden my client says, well, wait a minute, who's this doctor and what's this pharmacy and what are these drugs? We never authorized. Well, he never got those drugs, but they went out the back door. There's a lot of drug trafficking, I believe, in the healthcare business. I believe that.
Well, I mean, we see it all the time with all the opioids going around.
Yeah.
You know. I wanted to back up one. When they are taken to the hospital, because I don't want to leave anything open-ended, when they go to the hospital because they're going from the nursing home and you believe that they're being mistreated there, how long will the hospital, now they do a toxicology and, you know, give them nutrition and, you know, whatever was necessary to get them back.
Well, dehydration is big. Dehydration is real big.
Right. Well,
a lot of people end up.
A lot of them die that way.
Yeah.
But how long would the hospital keep them? So if you put them in the hospital, then you're busy running around and trying to find another facility that you can put them in. So would the hospital keep them for several days, or do you know?
Well, it's really case by case. If somebody's very serious and they go in with a stage 4 bed sore and it's septic, well, that person is immediately, in the hospital. They get out of the emergency room and they're admitted to the acute hospital for treatment. Those people don't leave right away. I mean, so it just is on a case-by-case basis. But if you have to fight them, under the federal law, you have the right to approve placement. So the person who has the decision on that has the right to go look at a facility that has a bed available and see whether or not they're going to approve it. Now, it's a fight every time because the ERs do not want to keep them, and maybe the acute hospital won't admit them. I usually will tell my family members, if that's the case, go to your primary doctor, and as long as that doctor can admit patients, he has hospital privileges, have your regular physician admit your family member for observation.
Okay.
But most of the time when people go out on 911s, they're in serious trouble, and they need immediate care. So they'll go into the ER, and the emergency room only treats the immediate symptoms. They don't do full body checks. So there could be bed sores that the ER misses because that's not what their duty is. Their duty is to bring that patient off the risk of dying, immediate death. And mostly it's dehydration, renal failure. I mean, dehydration can kill you.
It does, yes.
Yes. So a lot of people, they don't give them any water in the nursing home because they don't want to change their diapers. It's a vicious circle. So vigilance, you got to be there. You got to ask questions. And if you have any concerns at all, if you think that your family member is at risk, get them out of there. And you don't need the attending physician in that nursing home to approve going to the hospital. Call 911. The paramedics will pick up your family member.
And that is at any time?
Any time that there is a risk, absolutely. If you see
right,
your family member.
Right, but I'm just saying, I mean, you know, if it's 2 o'clock in the morning and
you call 911.
Right, right.
Absolutely. And go into the facilities anytime. Go in at 3 o'clock in the morning. They can't not keep you out. And if they do, you call my office, and I'll take care of that. Are you going to have a call
at 3
in?
O'clock?
Well,
3
no,
o'clock?
But I'm not in my office at 3 o'clock in the morning, but you could always call
right.
and leave a message.
Right,
know.
Right. So I don't
are
know.
Are you
Marty,
having a call-in today?
We don't have
Marty.
any active callers. We've got a full call board here, and that doesn't mean that's the only people listening, but we have a full 50 callers and no one flagging to come on.
Oh, okay.
So there aren't any questions.
Okay. So getting back to the hospice thing, I think it's a new wave that's hit the country now, and getting hospice, you know, in the old days, I think you had to be diagnosed 6 months and you're going to be dead. Of course, doctors can't tell you when you're going to die. I mean, they can guess. So people would go on hospice. Well, now I'm seeing people on hospice a year and a half. I said, what is your mother on hospice for? Well, the doctor put them on hospice, and I went, really? Now, hospice means you don't go back to hospital.
Correct.
Which I think is scary. So, and if you feel your family member's on hospice, and all of a sudden something happens and you don't think they're really going to die, take them off hospice. You can always rescind that hospice order and get them into acute hospital for an evaluation. Nothing
Correct.
Is binding.
Well, now there also is a limit on the amount of money that Medicare or Medicaid will pay for a hospice patient, and it usually is at 6 months. I believe in 2018 the price was changed to $28,000 and something.
Well, I think
but
the time period's gone up too. That you don't—it's not diagnosed 6 months anymore. I think it's longer than that.
I don't know that. I usually at the 6 months, you know, the money kind of runs out. I know with my mom that she was recertified for 2 more months.
Yes.
Okay.
And her money was running out at that time, and they hastened her death.
Mm-hmm.
So their money was running out, and they wanted to get the last bit, and they did that at the expense of her life.
Of course.
But you're right, 6 months. Now they're doing it for almost anything. They'll come up, you know, congestive heart failure, COPD. They come up and they say that now qualifies you to go
mm-hmm.
under hospice.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing that I think we had briefly just talked about is the palliative education
palliative
training
care.
Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that they're trying to pass now, which would give them an infusion of $440 billion to open million, I think, to open more hospices, which is not a good thing.
No, and you know, people are scared of the healthcare system because they feel like they don't know, and they're intimidated by the system. They're intimidated by doctors and nurses, and you know, I've heard them say, "Well, where did you go?" They've said that to me. Where'd you go to medical school? I said, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out what Haldol does to you. It's an antipsychotic.
Exactly.
So you don't have to, you know, I don't have to have a doctorate or I don't have to be a doctor or a pharmacist to know. It's common sense.
You can Google it. You can Google it now, and it tells you it's a black box drug and should never
exactly.
be given to anybody over 65.
And without informed consent in particular. And they're doing it all the time, and the state, that's why I'm saying there's no oversight. Why would that facility that's making $1 zillion every year profit, why would they want to act any differently if they're not held accountable? They wouldn't.
They wouldn't. Surely
no,
not.
They're not. No, they're not. And then if they get in a little bit of trouble with the regulators, they just sell it out, sell their facility to a friend or another shell company, and they just continue on their merry way. And all these years I've done this work, I've never met a poor nursing home operator. They're all very wealthy. They're very wealthy people at the cost of neglecting and poor care and abuse to our loved ones. I object to that.
Exactly. Well, I think that our last 2 weeks ago when we had Lisa Ann on, she can certainly attest to the fact that they are very rich, the people that were in charge of where her dad was.
Oh.
Lots of money.
I mean, we've researched so many operations all over the country, and I've never met I've never known of one, never seen one, never met one. Poor operator. Poor nurse. There isn't such a thing. They all make a lot of money, and they all siphon the money. They have their management companies. They have their property management fees that they pay for the property that are humongous. They're making tons of money off of our tax dollars and giving shoddy care. And
exactly.
Nobody in authority, in senators, congressmen, anybody, heads of the agencies, nobody, they're all turning their eye to it, all of them.
Right, right. Nobody reins it in because it's a money thing.
Exactly.
So.
No. And, you know, I have a real objection. I'm on the I have a lot of veterans that we've, you know, represented, their family members, or veterans that didn't die in facilities. I just recently wrote a letter to the president because he's so much for the veterans and saying, okay, I gave 10 examples of 10 veterans that we've represented and how they've served in World War One. I mean, I'm not in World War One, World War Two, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Iraq, all these people that have served in the war that made it out of the fighting and have died from horrible care in nursing homes.
Exactly. And hospitals.
And I'm still waiting for an answer. I mean, that's unfair.
That's sad that we don't get one. So,
well, and you know,
I hate to cut you short. I think we've got 3 minutes left. But can
that went by fast.
I know it does. Can you give the people, our audience, information on how to reach you and where to find your information?
Sure. You can go to the website. It's www.4fate, F like in foundation, ATE.org. So it's 4fate.org. So our acronym, Foundation Aiding the Elderly, our acronym is FATE. And isn't it all of our fate to get old? Well, when I named the organization, I didn't even think about it. Somebody brought it to my attention. Or you can feel free to call my office direct, 916-481-8558. Again, that's 916-481-8558. Either way, go to the website. There's a contact page. You can fill that out. Give us a description of what your problems are and how we might be able to help you, and put that online, and I will get it the next day. And we're pretty speedy about getting responses to people. We try to get it done as quickly as possible.
Okay. Is there anything else that you want to add? We have just a couple more minutes left.
No, I just aging, you know, when I was a youngster, people say, oh, the golden years. Well, I don't know what those are because I'm not seeing that. I'm not seeing that side of it. But as long as people know that any nursing home in this country, you have a risk. You're at risk for poor care and neglect. So if you have a family member, be vigilant, go in and watch them, advocate for their care, because we're all next in these places.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
If you have problems, unfortunately, the ombudsman program in this country is a failure. It's funded by the government, so anything that's funded like that by the government, I'm sorry, they can't do what we do. They can't be as proactive as we are because they get their funds cut off. So just keep that in mind. Be vigilant. Go different hours of the night. Look under the sheets. If you suspect that your family member may have bed sores, don't take their word for it. You do a body check yourself to make sure that there's no sores. Make sure that your family member has water available to them 24/7. Of course, when you're not there, what are you going to do? And people should learn how to test somebody if they're dehydrated. It's called Turgor, where you pull the skin up on the back of your hand, and if it stands up, that means you're dehydrated.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, that's a real big thing in nursing homes is dehydration. Okay, are we about time out?
Okay, we are. Thank you, Carol, very much for coming on and giving us some wisdom and some advice. So we definitely appreciate it, and you may be getting some more calls.
Oh, well, that's what we're here for. And, Marcia, you'll be hearing from me, too, in the next couple of days.
Okay, thank you. All right, and for everybody else, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay, bye, Marty.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Have a nice evening.
Good
goodbye.
Night,
you too.
Okay.
Good night, everybody.